Welcome to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for the Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Our hosts are Reverend Radio Ray Razor and Charlie Crawford. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good day. Good day. Yes, this is CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. And how you doing today, Brother Charlie?
I'm doing all right. Doing okay.
Okay. So this is our second show. We had our maiden show last week, and we had a good guest on with CNI, the new president, and Mr. Glenn, and Miss
Melissa.
Almond. All right. So it was a nice show. It really was. And you can go and listen to it on our website, CAGDU.org, and you can listen to our shows and be hosted there. So, Miss Renee, what is our lineup for today?
Well, we usually start with Stop Dogging Us Around. And today's topic is the good, bad, and ugly. Using a dog guide. And then, of course, we have Charlie's Corner. Our Chinese proverb says, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. And today, we start our journey learning more about our two hosts, Charles Charlie Crawford and Raymond, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, the life experience that shaped you, the journey that they have followed, the pitfalls they avoided, and the ones they fell in. So we're turning the tables on you today.
Okay. And our guests do want to know, I guess, who is their host on show. So that'll be fitting. And I hope it's not more of what pits we've fallen into than the ones that we have avoided. So this is Stop Dogging Me Around, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And some of the things I want to say in terms of good, it's definitely having a guide dog has been good for me, especially with some of the elements that's bad for blind people, and that's one, the wind. Well, we can't hear what's going on, and we have to stand there on the corner and decide, should we cross the street or not? So they have been, and I have traveled and given me the confidence that I needed in terms of, having the guide dog. So there have been some good things for me. Charlie, what would you say the good thing been for you? And you, this is your ninth dog, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, and what would you say some of the good things for you would be?
Well, one major good thing was that my first dog, Patsy, and I were walking at 2 o'clock in the morning in Cambridge, Massachusetts, not Cambridge, Watertown, Massachusetts, at a Perkins School for the Blind reunion. I didn't go there, but I had friends that went there. And so we're crossing the street, and all of a sudden this car comes up from my left and takes a right-hand turn directly in front of me. And the dog stopped quickly, and her harness hit that car. And I fell backwards onto the pavement, and so the guy screeched on his brakes, and I heard him scream something I won't repeat, and then he saw me getting up and he took off again. So the bad news was the guy could have hit me, but he didn't, and the good news is that my guide dog saved my life.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And you know, so and I won't say bad, but I will say it's an inconvenience for some people that they think of taking care of a dog, that they have to understand these dogs, you just don't put the harness on and say, take me up to 7-Eleven and the dog take off. I mean, you know, and a lot of people have that misunderstanding, Charlie, that people think that the dog does everything. But you have to have some decent, good travel skills. You have to have some good mapping skills to be able to tell a dog where to go and how to. And so it is imperative that you have a good travel skill. So it's not a thing of that sometimes people put a cane against having a guide dog. No, you need to have both to be able, especially to use a guide dog. You have to have some good some skills. And Charlie, how have you found that to be, you know, the controversy between use a cane or use a dog?
Well, I tell you, I learned how to use a cane back in Puerto Rico where I was living at the time, and I then used that cane for a year, and it was good. It worked pretty well. But then I got in a frame of mind that I wanted to get a dog because I was a Rin Tin Tin fan, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
And so I wanted a big companion German Shepherd. Anyway, so I applied to the Seeing Eye, and I got accepted. And then I took that harness in my hand, and I never looked back. That was so amazing. That dog just guided me like butter. It was just incredible.
It is. And then I was saying, I know you're on your ninth, but I would say being on my seventh, these dogs still cease to amaze me of the things that that they do. And that's why we wanted to start our first show with Seeing That Guide Dog School, because we have to give such credit to them for the way they have changed many persons' lives with giving us the independence to have these wonderful dogs to drag us around and put up with us all kind of ways and stuff. So we really, really thank you for that. So now we're going to go to one of our favorite segments, Charlie's Corner. And we want to say Charlie C. is bringing you information about the DMV. So, Charlie, take it away.
Thanks so much. Well, as I said last week, this is part two of Charlie's Corner, because I was talking about the relationship that can be built between county council members and blind folks to advantage blind folks. And the example of that I gave last week had to do with accessible pedestrian signals, you know, the beeping signals at the corners. And now we are in the middle of a lot of environmental changes in our counties. And so I have attempted, and along with other blind folks, to influence folks on our county council to make sure when they do planning for the future of the environment and streets and how people get around, that not to forget about the needs of blind folks. And I've had a reasonable amount of success with that, and I and the folks from the Northern Capital Area chapter of the American Council of the Blind. And the whole point here is that if the county council person gets to know you and realizes they can rely upon you for information, then not only do you make a friend, but you also develop a resource for your organization whenever you need to talk to them about something important. So it's now council member that I work with most often has been Tom Hucker, who is the vice chair of the Montgomery County Council, and he is also the chair of the Transportation Committee. So he has a lot of influence as it relates to things like Ride On and developing the county resources for transportation. And I say all that's important because if they make plans and then go ahead and implement those plans without ever consulting us, then more often than not, we end up having to try and fix what we never created, but they did.
You know, Charlie, and let me piggyback on that. How important, I know a lot of people say, I'm busy, but when these decisions are made and we're not at the table, how important it is that as a blind person and people with disability across the board to know who their legislators, the representatives are, know who their council people are, know who their senators are, and for they can go to the different meetings. And as you say, not always as an adversarial situation, But as we get to know these people, because we're no longer statistics, and so you have found, I mean, how encouraging you would encourage people, you know, to take time out.
I would very much encourage it, and I understand it is it's a burden to some extent. I mean, you're going to have various meetings that are going to happen, and you're going to want to stay at home and watch TV or whatever. But the point is that if the politicians see you at these meetings, then they realize that in part they're accountable to you, because after all, who are they working for? It's us. So let's make sure that they understand, and we understand their needs, they understand ours. And that doesn't mean that, you know, the blind folks are the only needs in town. Clearly, there are other folks with other needs, and they're important too. But to make sure that whenever our needs are met or their needs are met, that all of us are included, that's the important part.
Yeah. No, I really agree. And that's why, you know, another reason, in 2 weeks we're going to have, next week we're going to have Mr. Pat Sheehan, that's the president of the Silver Springs chapter, which is known as the, what's the initials on that chapter that people keep?
NCAC, Northern Capital Area Chapter of the American Council of Blind Maryland.
Oh, okay, that's what that is. So he's going to be our guest next Friday, because it's so important to belong to an organization that's going to advocate on your behalf. It's just so important to be part of that, I'm telling you. Charlie, how long you been a part of the American Council of the Blind?
Since 1971, I think it was. So,
And knowing their history, which we will, as periodically, we'll get to, especially when we talk to Mr. Sheehan, they started like 1965 or something. Matter of fact, I think in D.C. at a convention here.
Yeah.
One of the last conventions. Yeah, think so. So that's good. Any other nugget you can start with before we go to our ID break? We have a couple of minutes, and then you can give us a second half next week.
Charlie, let me real quick ask you about which
people have asked me about, and I think Prince George's County do not have it, which I live in, you in Montgomery County, these floating bus stops. Can you just real quick give us, before we go to the break, about these floating bus stops?
Oh, boy.
I think that's a whole
joke. Yeah, really. Well, the basic thing is that because the folks who want to use bicycles have done a pretty good job of lobbying, the planning department for the county developed a plan in which they got the bicycle lane next to the sidewalk, and thereby eliminated the ability of buses to stop there because there was now a bike lane. So what they had to do was create a bus stop about 10 feet away from the sidewalk. And that meant a lot of problems, and we'll get into that in a minute later.
Okay, so you hear music. So you're listening to CAG Do About Your Dog and You. And we're going to go to an ID break and come back on the other side with some more interesting information.
You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, located here in the nation's capital. For more information, visit us at CAGDU.org or call us at 301-263-7371.
All righty. So you're back with CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and my co-host and partner in this venture is Mr. Charlie Crawford. And that's Charlie C. that bring us information about the DMV. So, Miss Renee, we are your guinea pig. I mean, we are your guest, special guest.
That's so, absolutely right. We're turning the tables on our host today, Charlie Crawford and Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and the journey that they have followed and some pitfalls that they have avoided and some that they have fallen into. So we're going to learn a little bit more about that. So I think the best way for our listeners to get to learn about you is I'll ask you some questions. And this is not a – you can't pass. You got to speak. You have to answer it. So
I can't pass to Charlie, then.
No, you can't pass to Charlie. So the
Charlie said, do we have the truth?
As close as you can come, Charlie.
Okay.
So, Charlie, let me start with you. Are you from this area?
No. How's that?
No, that's not enough.
I was born in New York City and spent a couple of years traveling around the country with my father and my family because he was a salesman. Then we went to New Hampshire for about 5 years. And then at 12 years old, we moved to Puerto Rico. And
wow.
I was there until I was, there until 22. And I went to high school there and part of college and then came back to the States and went to the Seeing Eye to get a dog. And then I went to New Hampshire for a year and then down to Boston, Massachusetts for 25 years and down here for another 20. And that's my life in a nutshell.
Well, I don't want you to do it in a nutshell because I want people to get to know you, but that is pretty exciting.
That is pretty exciting. I know all that.
Okay, huh. So Reverend Radio Ray, are you from this area?
Well, yes, I am. And the thing about it, I did not have a suitcase or travel tickets like Charlie. I mean, they just kept me right here. I don't know if they was afraid of me going anywhere else or doing something I had no business or didn't have the right manners or what. But I am a native Washingtonian, and I'm right here in Prince George County. Have been here all my life, and God, I mean, okay, all right, okay, I got
it. You've been to Puerto Rico Avenue,
huh?
You've been to Puerto Rico Avenue.
Came to New York Avenue too, and. But no, I am a native Washingtonian and love this area, and I've been here for all my life.
Okay. They say that your birth order dictates your personality. The firstborn are usually the leaders, and the lastborn is always the baby. I'll start with you, Reverend Ray. Would you say that this is true for you?
I would say it's true for me. I am the oldest of six siblings. I'm the oldest, and I have one brother, and I have four sisters. And I have been the leader in this pack, as we refer to when it comes to dogs. And I have been the alpha male leader of my brother and six sisters. And I just recently lost a sister 2 years ago. So blessedly, I still have three. I have three sisters and a brother living, and my two sisters and brothers living in this area, and I have one sister that lives in Michigan. So we, unfortunately, we all work together.
Okay. So Charlie, the same question to you. They always say that the firstborn are the leaders, and the lastborn is always the baby. Would you say it's true for you also?
Well, I'm one of two fraternal twins. And to tell you the honest truth, I'm not sure whether I was first or second, but I believe that I am the second because I remember stories about my mother saying I was in such a hurry to get out, I pushed my brother out first. But in any event, he is probably 10 minutes older than I, or vice versa. I don't remember, unfortunately, he passed away a few years ago. So, but he, you know, we always had an interesting relationship, my brother and I, and we were not identical twins, so we didn't look alike. But he looked a lot more like my mother, because she's Puerto Rican, and I looked a lot more like my father, who's Irish. And so I have a magnet on my refrigerator that says, Irish Puerto Rican, the best of both worlds.
Oh, that's great. So, Charlie, you start with
Puerto Rican. Okay, well, Charlie, that tells me a lot about how you act sometimes. Okay, thank you. Okay. I did not know that. Them kind of genes was fighting them in there with you. Okay. Wow, that's amazing. Okay.
So, Charlie, with all the traveling that you did you consider that a typical childhood?
Oh, well, no, not really. I mean, the only other kids that I met that were who remind me of me were the folks that were military brats from their parents had been in the Army or the Air Force or Navy or whatever for many years, and they had to move around from base to base. But no, in terms of, I remember moving 12 times in my 2 years, I think, from Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was an adventure, yeah.
Okay. Reverend Ray, same question. Did you consider your childhood typical?
No, I knew it wasn't typical because it was just a group of kids of us that lived on First Street Southeast where the ballpark is today. And we lived right across from the Navy Yard, and they had a railroad track going down the street. We had four junkyards within walking distance of our house. We had a paper mill. We was right by the river. And so it was not typical, but it was exciting and interesting. And I guess it was all like the First Street Gang, and we lived there for probably a number of years where everybody just knew everybody, like, you know, back in the day that was the case. But typical, no, especially not in the black community. There's no such thing as typical.
Okay. So what would you say is one of your most memorable moments that shaped who you are?
Is that for me or Charlie?
Reverend Ray. For Reverend Ray.
I would say for me that shaped, well, it was a couple of times, but one was when I was at Maryland School for the Blind. I hated going to Maryland School for the Blind because we went there, we caught the Trahan bus from D.C., a bunch of us kids that lived in D.C., blind, and we went there on a Sunday. We stayed there because it was a residential school. And then we came back on a Friday, which when I look back on it, I was blessed because there was kids from New Jersey, Delaware, and stuff. They had to stay there into the holidays, the major holidays. But then, I lost my sight. I was still upset about that, you know, and why me, because I lost my sight at 13. So I was in an adolescent state. So I would go to school 1 week and fake something wrong with me and then go the next week. So we have achievement tests. So I was at school doing an achievement test, and this assistant coach that taught gym, because I didn't know Braille that well, those who did not know Braille that well, a teacher would one-on-one administer the test to you, you know, read it to you, and then write your answers down. And I never forget Mr. Mack, and he did that with me. He said, you know what, Ray, you are a bright kid. You know, there's so much more that you could do. Look at these answers that you've given me here and this and this and this. And I never forget that. I mean, then I started thinking, you know, maybe it is something more to me than just a rascal to cut up all the time. And from that point on, I started applying myself. I started paying attention. In class, I started, you know, and that was a turning point in my life. And so I stopped skipping a whole week. I started looking forward to going to school and pitting my talents against other kids and pitting my skills, and I got on the wrestling team, I got on the track team, I went to band and learned and took piano and learned piano and, you know, and stuff like that. And that changed the trajectory, you know, of my life. That was one at adolescence. All right.
Okay, and we're going to talk a little bit more about how you lost your sight. But, Charlie, what is one of your most memorable moments that shaped you?
I'm going to have to say the presidency of John F. Kennedy. I was living in New Hampshire in 1960 when he was running for president, and Jackie Kennedy was going to be at our church. And like an idiot, it was a great opportunity, but stupid Charlie didn't go. I was a little kid. What do I care about this? Well, anyway, so then after we moved to Puerto Rico, I was privileged to hear a lot of his press conferences and a lot of what his administration was saying, and it really made a lot of sense to me that, you know, this guy was really a pretty crackerjack guy. And so I began to make little speeches in the bathroom in my house. Nobody else could hear me, but, you know, I would model myself after the administration people and say, so someday I'm going to be a big politician. Well, you know, that never happened. But still, the whole inspiration that he gave and his it was just so incredible. And I really mourned when he died. So it set the pattern of my life towards politics, and that was important.
Wow.
We learned so much about each other. I want to take this time to get ready for our next segment, was losing your sight. And I don't want to start that before we have our ID break. So we're going to take our break about a minute early, and we want to let people know that you are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. And CAGDU is the Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and they're located right here in the nation's capital. If you want more information, you can visit us at CAGDU.org. That's CAGDU. Or you can call us at 301-263-7371. Okay, well, Reverend Ray, you started us off minutes ago, and so I wanted to do this segment all in one piece. You mentioned how you had lost your sight. Can you tell us a little bit about how you lost your sight?
Yes, I was a mere lad at 13 years old. I was living in D.C., going to Shaw Junior High School, and then Charlie had mentioned about President Kennedy. That was in he had just been assassinated, and I never forget that. And I saw it on the TV. I ran outside to tell everybody, and they said, "No, don't be playing Razor. You playing? No." And as Charlie say, that was just profound. You know, living here in D.C., that had happened. But anyway, so. That 4th of July, we was all in the alley playing with fireworks and stuff. And, you know, we snuck off and bought some big firecrackers. And of course, you know, that's my mother was like, okay, I'm going to let y'all play with fireworks at this time. But, you know, that's a no-no. But we're getting ready to go to the park. We're getting ready to go up to Rock Creek Park to you know, have a picnic and stuff like that. So we was all in the alley playing, and I had bought some cherry bombs, the big firecrackers, man. And we was all in there playing and stuff like that, throwing them around, and one ricocheted off the wall, and somebody said, "Raymond, turn." And when I turned the wrong way, and the cherry bomb blew up in my face and blinded me at 13. And that's how I lost my sight. But I often say at this point it probably was a blessing in disguise, because I'm living there at in Northwest. Most of the fellas I know, men I know, young men I know that grew up, they either became drug addicts or they either ended up getting killed or shot or ended up in jail. So I probably was blessed that I'm sure the things I'm doing now as a minister, the opportunities I had to work for CNI and a number of things, I'm sure they would not have been in the cards for me if I had not lost my sight in, 50-something years ago.
Yeah. Charlie, when did you lose your sight?
Well, I'm still looking for it, but I was
poorly
born,
worded question.
I was born with retroventral fibroplasia, which is now known as neuropathy of prematurity or something like that. Anyway, the point is that when I was born, I was born prematurely, and they put my brother and I in incubators, and he came out fine, but I came out with too much oxygen in the incubator, so it created a lot of blood vessels in my eyes that reduced my vision, and over time, it just dissipated because of the effects of the RLF. And so by the time I was 14, I realized I couldn't ride my bike at night anymore because I ran into a parked car. That was a wake-up call. I stopped riding my bike at night. And then when I went to college, I had poor vision. And one day I went to the doctor and I said, "Well, you know, what's going on here?" And he said, "Well, you're still okay. You'll probably lose your sight by the time, 20 years from now." And I was 22 then, and 2 weeks later, it was gone. So,
oh, my God.
Was it sudden?
It was expected. It just, just went away. And so, but the interesting thing is that I would not admit that I really had a sight problem until one day at school I walked off into a 6-foot ditch. And then I realized, I have a problem.
Yeah, a big one.
Yeah. But,
so, Charlie, what was the biggest adjustment to going from low vision to blindness?
No vision. Well, I think that for me, it was all the beauty in the world. I mean, ranging from sunsets, the mountainsides, to beautiful young women. The only advantage, actually, I remember is all the women I remember were beautiful.
Wow.
Because you could picture them in your mind, you saw them, But nowadays, you're not going to see any of that nowadays, so anyway. But I really do think that I adjusted to blindness basically because I realized finally that, I was blind, that's true. But I had a good mind, and I had the ability to articulate things, and I could do a lot of things, and I either could do one of three things, either nothing, which I was not going to do, or get more miserable and depressed, which I was not going to do, or take what I had and use what I could for the extent that I could and make a success out of my life. And hopefully that's what I did.
Well, that's a great segue into our next section, which I call Love, Sex, and Family. Yeah.
Should have started out, though.
Well, you mentioned beautiful women, so you do segued into it beautifully. So, Charlie and Ray, you hit adolescence. Did you think about girlfriends?
Well, for me, not adolescence. I didn't think about girlfriends at adolescence. I had a girlfriend named Sister when I lost my sight. Matter of fact, I'm crazy enough to that I have erased, took an eraser and put a big S on my arm because I always wanted to be the Afro, so Afro, the Afro Meg, dog. And so other people was taking erasers and doing their skin and putting little initials on it, and I did my skin and put a big initial on it for S, and it's still on there because it was so big. And I thought I was going to lose my arm when the thing got infected and stuff. And now when people see the S on it, like a doctor or a nurse, I was like, what is that? You know, I say, well, that's staying for Superman or stupid. I don't know which one. and she was the last, matter of fact, when I lost my sight in the alley, she was the last thing I saw because I was going to throw a firecracker at her to scare her, right? So when I was looking at her to throw the firecracker, being devilish to scare her, that's when somebody said, Raymond, turn. And that's when I turned and cherry bomb blew up my face. So that was, you know, the extent. Then I, you know, had little girlfriends here and there until I started a life of, you know, a little older. Then I really got into girlfriends. Okay.
Okay, so Charlie, you hit adolescence, and did you think about girlfriends and how you were going to manage dating?
Boy, that was tough. I have to say that for the first 2 years I was in Puerto Rico, I would not learn Spanish. And I figured, hey, this is the United States, so, you know, you got to speak to me in English. But, you know, that was like the ugly American attitude. And so eventually I said to myself, wait a minute here. If you don't learn Spanish, you'll never be able to date any of these girls. So, oh, yeah, it's true. So anyway, I had a powerful motivation to learn Spanish. Then I never really dated much in high school, principally because my sight wasn't all that great, and everybody else was like succeeding or whatever they were doing. And I was basically, I did two tracks. I had schoolwork, which I did good at, and I also had religion because I, at the time, I was Catholic and I went to Mass every day for a year. And the whole point was, I didn't really pay a lot of attention to the relationships questions until later. And then when I got into college, I began to date more successfully than I did in the past. And the rest is history.
The rest is history. Okay.
Well, you know what? I'm curious. Did you consider sighted and non-sighted girls by that time, or was it women that you were dating? But sighted or non-sighted, Charlie?
Both.
Okay.
I mean,
Reverend Ray?
Oh,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Charlie.
Let Charlie finish. Yeah, after I had met some blind women, then I expanded my level of interest, shall we say, and actually ended up marrying one. So.
Okay. Okay. Reverend Ray, when you were dating, did you consider sighted and non-sighted women, or how did you manage that?
Well, I considered both. But the thing is, I had never planned to get married, so that I wasn't even thinking about that. But I considered both, and I dated both.
Okay. So you obviously both got married. Did you have a family?
That, That's
Reverend
Ray,
we'll start with you. That's for you, Reverend Ray.
Okay, well, yes, I got married 3 times. and I had out of that beautiful
man,
two.
Did you consider marriage at all?
Well, you know, I caught up. I got married. My first marriage was in 81. I got married January 81. My first wife, a beautiful creature. Only thing about her is that she would pay $60 for a pair of shoes before she paid $5 for a phone bill to pay. So anyway, that didn't work out. And we didn't have any children. So I got married again in 86, had a beautiful daughter named Rayshawna, and which graduated from Duke Ellington, and now she lives in Las Vegas. She's a triple threat. That means she sings, she dance, and she performs. And I have a son named Ray Jr., which we call Cool because he was so cool when he was a little kid. And he works for the government in records for archives or some one of them places. And then I married a beautiful creature named Miss Renee Kaiser Razor from a black Brit from the UK, Birmingham. And for been married for 23 years now and is ecstatically happy. And every day she's like a girlfriend to me.
Okay, you can't have a girlfriend. Okay, so let me ask you something, Reverend Ray, and then I'm a follow up with Charlie. How did you explain your blindness to your children?
My daughter, I took care of all of the different blind places with me that I was involved in. At the time, I was a blind vendor that had a cafeteria and a deli and all in the different government buildings. This program called the Randolph Shepherd Program. So I was a blind vendor, a business person. So I would take her to work with me, and I was involved with blind groups, and I would take her around with me. So to her, that was, you know, normal. But I remember one time somebody came by the house and say, "There's no lights on in here. How can your daughter see?" Well, she got used to walking around the house with no lights and stuff, right? So she understood blindness, but she had started becoming a little overprotective because I heard outside one time she was like 7 years old and she was playing. And they said, "Where you going?" She said, "Well, I'll be back. I got to go check on my father to make sure he's okay." I said, "Whoa, okay, I got to change this this scenario." But yeah, so with her, with my son, it was a little different. He's older, and it was a little more difficult with him because I was sort of ashamed of being blind. You know, having a son, you can't go out to play ball with him. You can't, you know, do a lot of the things with him. And unfortunately, in the black community, we still haven't even to today, and that's one of the things that I'm working on in terms of making awareness of the disability, because you know in the blind community, in the black community, when during slavery times, if a slave had a child and the child had a disability, that they would kill it because there was no use to them. So black families and mothers learned how to hide the disability of the child. You know, they would compensate for it, do it work or something like that. So even today, black people, the African Americans or blacks, they still won't accept the fact of having a child with a disability. So the children lose out on a lot of services and stuff because they don't. Whereas in the white community, not only that they embrace the kids to a point that those parents will start an organization. You know, they're not black organizations that's like, say, hey, you know, our kids ain't getting the kind of services we need, so we starting this new organization. Well, that don't happen in the black community. So I'm saying all of to say, because of that stigma, you know, I was ashamed of being blind around my son, and we even still trying to just to this day work out having a relationship.
Okay. Well, you hear the music, which means that it was time for a station break and an ID break. So we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry organic food, raw food, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, and you can give them a call at 202-747-3434. Again, that number is 202-747-3434. Well, I want to get back to our interview. We're going to have to, watching the time means we're going to have to skip some areas, but I wanted to ask you about careers. How did you decide on that? Now, a lot of young people try several things.
Ms. Renee, I know that, but I wanted to ask, I wanted Charlie to tell about, do he have a family? Because I don't know if he had one of that.
Okay, well, we can do that. Just in the interest of time, I've got many, many more questions. Charlie, do you have a family?
Well, yes, I do. To make a long story short, my current wife of 34 years is the light of my life. She's also blind, and she had a kid when she and I got together, and her son is Stephen, and he is he's a wonderful guy, and he's now 44 years old himself. So he was like six when she and I got hitched, and basically I never really, the issue of blindness never really came up much at all. I mean, the only thing he would do would be helpful would be, you know, when we wanted a cab or something, he would, I remember going to Fenway Park with him, and at the end of the game, we'd all go outside and he'd find a cab for us, that kind of thing. So, but, you know, it was pretty normal childhood.
Okay. Good. Now, you know, I again, Reverend Ray, thank you for reminding me to ask all the questions. I've gotten so many. But, Charlie, you mentioned your faith, and I want to ask both you and Reverend Ray, well, with a handle like Reverend Ray, you would think, but does faith have a place in your life now? Charlie, I'll start with you.
Talking to me? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. I am, and my wife is obviously, we are Episcopalians, and we have a wonderful Grace Church, Episcopal Church here in Silver Spring, and got a wonderful congregation. It's both white, black, Hispanic, and everybody's in it, you know. And it's also has wonderful clergy, so it's the right kind of place to be.
Oh, it sounds great. Reverend Ray, what about you?
Well, I had a journey of up and down going to this church, that church, years ago. The Lord tapped me on my shoulder and said, hey, I want you to become a minister. And I said, Lord, come on, that ain't for me. I'm having too much fun cutting up and carrying on. And so he put me in some situations where I needed to drop on my knees and ask him that I needed help. So 3 years ago, matter of fact, this month, I became ordained and became a minister. And I started a church called St. Didymus St. Didymus of and by people with disability. And St. Didymus was a blind. He was a blind minister in the 4th century, and that's where we took the name of the church from. And so our church is set up for persons with disability. We meet once a month right now. Right now we're on hiatus, of course, and we meet the third Saturday from 3 to 5 for people that's ashamed of their family and friends with disability. They can go to their highbrow churches and stuff from 9, 8 o'clock in the morning, whatever. So then they can bring their their family members that's blind or have a disability to our church from 3 to 5, and they can participate in the church. They can pray if they want. I mean, they can be ushers. They can do the prayer. Read the prayer in Braille. If somebody that's autistic, if they want to give the prayer, they can just pray. We don't care if they say hallelujah, hallelujah. We try to have whoopee cushions to put in the chairs for people that have problems sitting. People that don't want to be near people that have certain type of spatial problems, we have the big hula hoops and put them in the floor. They can sit in that. Nobody can touch them. I'd say nobody, because of the attention span of people with disability, nobody, and that's including me, can preach more than 20 minutes. And we'll have a special feature where we'll have somebody come to do a presentation about a product or service for persons with disability, for they'll have something to take away. So it's more of a fellowship than anything. But yeah, so that's where I am now, and that's what the Lord had me doing. And I have a seven piece gospel group called Men of Praise that I'm the music director, and I play keyboard as well as the manager, and we go up and down the East Coast and stuff, in music. And one of the things great about that, I get to go to churches and I get to, talk about disability and stuff like that. And it's just amazing, the churches that say, oh, Reverend Ray, we don't have anybody with a disability in our church. And then people come to me in their church and say, I'm so glad you said something, because, I don't bring my child here to church with my friend because people staring with stuff. And I go back and talk to the pastor and say, well, they never said anything. And then the second part of that is that if somebody that's have a disability goes to a church and the church don't let them participate, then we go to that church on their behalf and say, hey, this is the way you can, work it out. Like a blind person wanted to sing in the choir and people been ducking them and the choir director and all of them. Then we have the expertise in the disability community, so we can sit down with them and say, hey, look, we can get the music put on tape for them. We can get the music put on, in Braille. So, yeah, so that's my whole thing. So now I'm just, there for the Lord to do what he asked me to do. And I don't be ashamed of it. I pray when I need to pray. I say grace when I need to grace. So just like other religions, the Jewish religion, the Muslims and stuff, they do, and especially Jehovah Witnesses, they do not, make apologies for their religion. And as a Christian, I don't either. And as Forrest Gump say, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I don't remember him saying that, but it's a good line. Well, listen, I am only halfway through the information that I think is important to our listeners, because I think oftentimes some of these areas are a little bit sensitive, and they don't really come up in polite company like love, sex, and family, or even your faith. That's the advantage of being an interviewer. But I still want to hear more about your career, how you decided on that, about how you got involved with Dog Guides, how CAGDU was formed. So, I want you to consider letting us do part two next week of this interview, because it's fascinating. As a sighted person, I just want to say that we often are curious how a person lost their sight. What was the adjustment like? And there's no polite way of asking those questions unless you're intimate with a blind person. And I mean intimate in terms of being in their circle, and oftentimes it still doesn't come up. So as the executive producer, I'd like for you to consider that, Reverend Ray. As the executive producers, I'd like for you to consider that, Reverend Ray and Charlie Crawford. So we are out of time, so I'm going to turn it back over to our hosts and let them close us out.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Blake. Thank you very much. Me and Mr. Charlie, she will talk about that, because we did get a confirmation from Mr. Pat Shein. So we will talk about that. And you're right. I mean, a lot of times people do want to know how people with disability and stuff, how they live and if we real people and that kind of thing. So, Charlie, me and you will talk about it. But before we, you know, our time is up, and we certainly thank our audience for their time. And until the next time with Brother Charlie, do you have any parting words before we close out the segment and this second show?
Only to say that I really enjoyed the show. I think we should do the follow-up, and that could probably take place in 2 weeks. Do Pat next week and then the follow-up after that. And that should keep us going pretty well, as far as I can see.
All right. So our time is up. We thank you for your time. And until the next time, this is Reverend Radio Ray Razor with my co-host, Mr. Charlie Crawford, which is Charlie C., that brings information to the DMV. And we like to say, we're always going to say as we close out with this, you can hug your honey, but pet your puppy. God bless and be blessed.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego.